Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Anthony Curtis, publisher of the Las Vegas Advisor and Huntington Press, an all-around knowledgeable guy about gambling. Anthony Curtis, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Good to be here once again. Thank you.
We have some questions for listeners. First, a player who was successful at both poker and video poker is considering adding blackjack to his arsenal. He wants to know the best way to get up to speed on high-low. Should he use computers, boot camp? How should he do it?
First of all, when people want to learn, I recommend three books. Knockout Blackjack by Vancuna, Black Belt in Blackjack by Arnold Snyder, and I also really like Blackjack Blueprint, I think it is, the Rick Blaine book. Now, Knockout is not about high-low, but it's about the KO, which is equally good. So I would start there, and I would also recommend the Casino Verite software.
So who's this Vancuna guy?
Is he friends with Vancura?
Vancura, yeah, there you go.
The big Vancuna, like the big kahuna, right? I agree with that advice. I've always felt when people ask me how should I learn, and I've got a lot of friends who that I've known for a long time who want to teach and give seminars and things like that. I've always felt that just reading a book is a way to go. If you wanted to do just the high-low, it's hard to beat the original Wong treatment in professional blackjack. You know, I mean, that's what we all got started on was reading Stanford Wong way back when. I also agree, Blackjack Blueprint, Rick Blaine, Rick Night Train Blaine, they call him, and, a former winner of the Blackjack Ball, very talented. And the thing about Blackjack Blueprint is that it covers the high-low and other counts, so you can make a decision on what you want to do. But it also covers things regarding team play. It covers shuffle tracking to some degree, sequencing. It gives you such an overview of all the things that you can do in blackjack. Certainly for an unbalanced count, Knockout Blackjack, I publish it, so of course I love it, but that's Olaf Vancura and Ken Fuchs. Terrific book. And one book that we've just acquired that I've got to say that I didn't realize how good it was until, I mean, I looked at it years ago, but I kind of went around it, and now that I've published it and read it, Bryce Carlson's Blackjack for Blood is really a fine book to learn by.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good book.
All right. Another listener sent in a question at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. He says he has an outstanding marker of several thousand dollars owed to a small United States casino boat that just goes to international waters for gambling. The marker has been owed for more than a year. As far as he knows, they've not made any attempt to collect the marker. Since the casino isn't tempting to collect, is it okay to walk away from the marker?
Well, you have to decide your own ethics, right? I guess there are two parts to this. One is, what's ethical, and the other is what's legal. I have no idea what the laws are. In Nevada, it would be the kind of thing where you could end up with a warrant and end up in jail for an unpaid marker. But with a casino boat, I have no idea. I guess it depends on how well you sleep at night, knowing that that marker is out there, and whether will it come back to bite you in the ass.
Well, it's kind of cool to hear you say that, because the first thing I wrote down was moral issue. In one way, I don't know. Is it an advantage play to skate on a marker? A debt owed. I've never felt it was. I mean, I've always felt that if you've taken a loan or a marker or anything like that, that's something you ought to pay. To the actual point, I don't think I would scurry around trying to pay it, if they weren't trying to collect it, if they weren't bothering me about it and I could float that loan for a while, I think I wouldn't see anything wrong in doing that. If they're actively trying to collect the marker, I would think for a lot of reasons, leave the moral and ethics out of it, just staying out of harm's way with the law. They've gotten much more aggressive since gambling's become more mainstream. They've gotten much more aggressive about going after and collecting debts. So, who needs that trouble? especially if he says it's a small marker, just pay it and move on, I would reckon.
You know, I remember like 35 years ago or something, Wong was asked about paying taxes on blackjack winnings because, you know, we deal in cash. And I remember him saying, you know, I sleep better at night. I pay my taxes and I sleep better at night. And I've always felt the same way. You if it's going to keep you up at night, then it's certainly not worth messing around. And, I mean, it's a casino boat is one thing, an unpaid marker, but you definitely don't want to mess with the U.S. government.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I felt that way my whole life. I've always paid my taxes. I know a lot of gamblers who deal in cash that have indicated to me that they find ways around it if they can. They look at me like I'm square. I mean, they really do. They tell me I'm square for claiming everything. But you know what? I never have to look over my shoulder. And you know what? Nobody ever can hold anything over me. You know, nobody who knows my business can ever say, you know, get mad at me about something and say, I'm going to do this to you, because that's not something I do, and it's not something that anybody could ever use against me. So I very much believe in that too. You know, there's the ethics part of it about doing the right thing and what our laws are and all, but I mean, there's also the business part of it of not having to be afraid.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, moving on. In Las Vegas, the Casino Cromwell is the smallest of the local Caesars entertainment properties. It's located where the Barbary Coast used to be. It seems they're making an attempt to compete via better gambling opportunities. Anthony, what do you know about this?
Well, what you just said is true. That's what they're attempting to do. They're trying to, you know, how do you distinguish yourself when you're the crummy little Cromwell, you know, on the corner, which was, what, Bill's Gambling Hall and Saloon, and before that it was the Barbary Coast. The Barbary Coast had kind of some kind of weird flair. I don't know what it was about it. You know, they had a sports book and cheap hot dogs and...
Well, and they had a great location and great parking. Like,
yes.
If you were going anywhere else on that corner, I always parked there at the Barbary Coast.
Right, and theoretically, the Cromwell should have had the same thing, but they kind of messed with it, and they tried to make the Cromwell this boutique, you know, awesome jewel that all the high rollers would go to and the partiers would go to with Dre's and that whole thing. And it kind of backfired on them. Nobody was interested. Nobody really wanted to go there. And they didn't have a cheap food outlet. And they didn't have, you know, they had just regular strip-style games. And they didn't have a sports book. You know, think about it. What other casino on the strip does not have a sports book? The only thing that comes to mind for me is Casino Royale, and they now have a satellite. They have a satellite book in there. So the only place on the strip that didn't have a sports book was the Cromwell. And I think they looked at that whole thing and they said, okay, you know, we've got to distinguish ourselves one way. We've got to differentiate ourselves somehow. And they're trying to do it with these games. So here's what they've done, as far as I know. They're the only place in town right now that deals 100 times odds on craps. Speaking of Casino Royale, they used to do that. They stopped doing that a little over a year ago. So there's some 20 times odds downtown. There's some 10 times odds all around. This is the only place that deals 100 times odds. Is that really a big thing? Not really. But I mean, you know, it is sort of something that's more along the liberal way. They are one of only two casinos I know that have a single zero roulette table on the floor, on the main floor. There are several single zero roulettes up and down the strip in the high roller rooms, but only the Mirage is the only other one that I know that has one or two on the floor, and they do have it on the floor at the Cromwell. They just added a sports book. It opened Tuesday. It just opened Tuesday in time for, you know, football season, so they've got that going. Their blackjack games have games that deal 3-2 blackjack on handheld decks, the double-deckers. And their video poker we'll talk about in a second. But here's the catch. Here's the catch on this. All of these cool things that they're doing at the Cromwell are all for very high, they're for high limits. You know, some of them $100 minimums, excuse me, high minimums. Some of them for $100, 25 at the best. That being their roulette tables, 25 and 100. You can do it for the odds, $10. The blackjack games that are good are $50 and $100 minimums, and there's only about four or five of them. Most of their games are shoe games with 6-5. So
wow, that is just crazy that they wouldn't put that on. I mean, the shoe games. I mean, if I were, I would be doing it the opposite. I mean, I wouldn't be. I'd have them all 3-2, but it seems to me.
Well, I'm gonna check myself. I'm pretty sure they're shoe games, but even if they're not, if they're double decks, they're still 6-to-5 games. That I know. I know that the majority of theirs, some of them being shoes, are definitely 6-to-5s. But what I'm saying is the good deals on the good rules are all at the high minimums. And if you're playing, you know, a roulette game and you've got to bet $25 with a single zero, and you can bet next door $10 on double zero, you're better off expected value wise playing that double zero at the $10 minimum. So right. It's a funky little game they're playing here, and it's kind of strange.
Well, this is unfortunate because, you know, people always contend, myself included, that if they would loosen the games, their revenue would go up. But now, under these conditions, I don't know that if they'll be able to see whether...
I agree.
That, you know...
I agree. And you know what? But who knows? All this stuff's obviously can be in flux, and they can change it. And, you know, I'm going to keep an eye on it. I go in there once in a while and check it out. And I listen to what my people, you know, the LVA members and all write to me. And I'm going to watch it because if they do make it a little bit more open to the public with lower minimums, what a great way to market. I mean, what a fantastic way to be different from all the other places on the strip. Now, their video poker, I'm going to quote what I read. You know, Bob would know more about this.
I checked it out earlier today.
Okay, so you went
in. I'm up to date on there.
Looks like great for quarters. It looks like some really great stuff for quarters all the way up to not so ugly deuces. Full pay, jacks are better, you know,
that's
that
sort of thing. Those are the best games. With triple-double bonus in there. The quarters only, there are 6 machines close to the door at Flamingo and Las Vegas Boulevard. It takes $50 to earn a reward credit, which is 5 times as much as their other video poker. If you exclude those 6 machines, none of the other games, video poker games in the casino are playable by Las Vegas standards.
Same strategy,
but it's except it's the bottom
table,
end.
The it's, table game, yeah, it's the bottom end instead of the top end.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Now, there's fees for parking. If you're high enough in the total reward system, it's free, and if you're Nevada residents, it's 24 hours for free. The total reward system is not really geared for quarter players. You know, they accept them, of course, but. The local clubs in Las Vegas, whether you're talking about South Point or the Stations or Boyd, have some kind of regular cashback or free play system where you get this money back. Total rewards is totally different than that. It makes more sense, the total reward system, if you're a much bigger player than quarters. So locals in Vegas, as long as you're going to play games where they penalize you for playing it, there's a lot better option than NSU deuces at various other casinos. If you're on the strip, you're from out of town, and you want to play something, well, you can get a few points in. But if you can get a seat, there's only 6 machines, and they're full. And if your record is to having, you know, $10,000 a day coin in or something, and here you put in $3,000 a day on the quarter game, but it's only going to show up at $600 because it takes a lot more to earn total reward. You're going to mess up your ADT at the total rewards property, but it is there.
See, this is, all right. There's so many facets to what we just heard there. You know, one is how many different things go into a good game. Right? How many different things you have to think about? And so here you have Bob Dancer explaining, yes, they do have this, but you have to consider this N, A, N, B, and C, and D. And I, you know, that's really important. Two is they're fooling around a little bit too much there. You know, it's like, okay. And I would go and I would sometimes talk to casino people and I'd say, why don't you just put in a couple of good games and then you can advertise it on your marquee? You know, we have 100% video poker. Well, we've only got 2 of them. Okay, that works to a certain degree, right? But I mean, when you're getting into a thing like this, if you're gonna go casino wide and say we're the loosest on the strip and we're the best and we've got all this stuff, I think you've got to make it a little bit more open to the public and not just quite so restrictive as, you know, we've just learned that just about everyone's got some sort of a red herring attached to it.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, I want to get your opinion on something related, which we hadn't talked about ahead of time. I don't know if you saw the article by Jeff Wang about the inventory of lower-end hotel rooms on the Strip. Jeff Wang's been on the show, and he writes for Motley Fool, and he has a recent article about how everybody thinks that millennials don't gamble, and he's saying he doesn't think that's true, but there's a bigger problem, and the bigger problem is there are a lot less lower-end rooms on the Strip than there were 20 years ago. And he talks about all the hotels that have come down and have not been replaced with the equivalent price point rooms.
Like Riviera's no more.
Yeah, with his thesis being what? I downloaded that article this morning. I have not read it yet. Saw it.
No, so his thesis is this is a problem if you're pricing out all of those people that used to come and stay in the lower in the lower priced rooms. Like there's still the Link. You know, they're going after kind of lower end. There's Circus, you know, places like that. But
they've turned their back on that bedrock customer. I mean, I get these letters every day, and I get these emails every day from people going, Vegas doesn't want me anymore. I mean, basically, that's the theme of what I get, what we get from our customers. Las Vegas Advisor, of course, we're looking for bargains, you know. So that's our customer, client base. But these are good gamblers. I know what these people do. I mean, I've seen their records of my players. When I go in to negotiate coupons for the member rewards book, I have to go into meetings and talk about the value of our customers. And I've seen what our low rolling customers do. Some of them fire it up big time, man. I mean, they really go at it. And I think, you know, this was like the old George Maloof, formula that you would have the high end, you would go for those customers, but you would always pay a lot of attention to your bedrock, you know, lower end and mid-range players. And I guess probably Jeff Wong's probably saying this is a problem. I'm looking forward to reading that article. Jeff's good. He knows his stuff for sure. And I tend to agree with what I know about it so far. Yeah, that's a problem.
Should be good for the Coasts and the Stations properties, I guess.
Well, great for them.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean...
And they've been doing well, while the Strip places have not, right?
Very well.
And South Point, which
and happens, South Point,
happens
yes.
to be a value sponsor.
Well, all of those. I mean, when you're really talking about value operators, you are talking about probably South Point right at the top of the heap. Really, the things they do there are quite amazing. I would put El Cortez, you know, even though it's a downtown, not a locals place per se, but it's a downtown locals place. To a degree, Rampart, certainly the Station Casino, certainly the Boyd Casinos. You know, there's a lot of them out there. There's a lot of good ones you can still go to. And now the Palms is part of Station, so that's part of that one too. You know, some of the lower end of the big guys, like the Rio to some degree, you know, I mean, they're still out there. I just got back from Boulder. I was taking a friend down to Boulder Highway to check out the Longhorn, which is unbelievable. You know, you still go in there and you get one of these giant ham steaks and eggs, kind of just covers your whole plate. It's $4.99, and when you're done, you can't eat it. You cannot eat the whole thing. You know, we took half the ham out. And when you get done, they give you a $5 first card ace to play on so worth $2.60. So effectively, what are you doing? You're paying, you know, $2.40 for ham and eggs that you just can't find anymore. So these places are around. These values are there. The bargains are there. It's just the Strip has just become a different animal. I almost hate going there myself. I mean, I don't want to.
I've heard something about the Comp City slot app. What is it?
Okay, so, Comp City Slots. It's a new app that we're putting out. It's a Las Vegas Advisor app. We themed it after, you know, the great Max Rubin book, Comp City, because we thought that was a real catchy name. We've wanted a lot. I mean, for years and years, we've wanted an interactive, or as many interactive components as we can get at LasVegasAdvisor.com. You know, we changed a lot of things we went through. We've talked about this with me on the show before. We've gone through some grief with the changes we've made. I'm thrilled with the changes we've made, to be honest. It's not just Party Line. At first, I wasn't sure, and then I paid attention to the way things were moving and changing. And I'm really happy with the things we did, which allowed us to do more interactive things. But what we didn't have was a kind of a good mobile presence. We have to this moment, we have something called LVA Casino, which is a pretty pedestrian attempt at trying to, you know, have a casino that people could play on. It has a good tournament format. So once a month, up until this month, we've had something called Sunday Funday. We ran that 42 months in a row, where we gave away $100 and we gave away a lot of books and LVA memberships and things like that. But it just, again, didn't have a mobile presence, and it was kind of falling into itself based on old coding. It was based on Flash. It just wasn't something that was going to stand up. So going back to Vancouna, or Olaf Vancura, he has an app. He makes apps. Olaf, you know, not just being an author, but he was a game developer for years and years, and now he has a company that makes applications. And he came to me about doing one for Las Vegas Advisor. And that's what we've done. It's called Comp City. It is, it's state of the art. It's, being released right now on what we call a soft release. It's social gaming. It's social. All right. It's just like Farmville or, you know, when you buy things to build a farm, or, M-Life, right? When the people do to get comps at,
My Vegas.
Yeah. The M-Life stuff, through the M-Life program. Yeah. Just like My Vegas, really. It's, slots and video poker. You buy coins or you get coins. You know, when you go there every day, you get coins and you can play. If you want to buy them, you buy them. A lot of people buy them, believe it or not. It's, to me, it's buying air, but that's what they do. They buy it because they like it. They buy it because they want status. But with ours, there's going to be a comp component to it too. So people who play a lot, and there's a lot of handle that goes through, they're going to be able to win books and trade their points in for Huntington Press and LVA products. So it's cool. All of the major slot games are there, styles that is, because we can't use the exact games, but all of the major video poker games are there, including certain games. All the games that we have 100% plus pay tables on them. And some of them don't exist in the real world, but we created them. So I know Bob Dancer won't go play for nothing, but I mean, these are Bob Dancer-esque kind of schedules.
I can get a free copy of Sex, Lies, and Video Poker.
That's right. You can get a copy of your own book without having to go down. Yeah, we'll deliver it to you. You don't have to go down to the warehouse to pick it up. But I mean, every game, there's going to be a Jacks or Better version with 100%. There's going to be a bonus Poker Deluxe version with over 100%. And I think people that play casually, I think they're going to like it. And it's going to open us up to a lot more of the market, because it's going to be completely mobile-based.
Very good.
Big old advertisement, I know. But, yeah. You know, I mean, really, that's something we've spent a lot of time putting together, and that we think is pretty cool. I know this sounds wrong the way I say it, but kind of like spouses of gamblers. And I'm not just saying, you notice I didn't say wives or girlfriends. You know, sometimes it's the husbands and boyfriends. But sometimes they want to kind of play too, but they really don't want to put money down on it. And this sort of seems to work for that group as well.
All right. We've been talking to Anthony Curtis. We have several more questions for him. We're going to do a few commercials. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In August, Summer Sizzling Seat Giveaway, every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 9 a.m. to 2 a.m. the following day, approximately 20 random players each hour will be awarded $100 in free play. Week 5 of the free video poker classes, Wednesday, August 30th, will be 9-6 Bonus Poker Deluxe. This is a 99.64% game that is like Jacks or Better, except you receive more for quads and less for two pairs. The strategy is similar to Jacks or Better, but there are some differences. If you're planning to come to the advanced classes on September 6th, this class or knowledge of the game is a prerequisite. The beginner's class will be at noon, intermediate class starting at 2 p.m. Classes are in the Silverado Lounge, which is immediately in front of Don Vito's restaurant. Everyone at least 21 years of age is welcome. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is 100 Play Quick Quads, which is my idea of fun video poker, should you be able to find a good pay schedule in this game, which I haven't yet. Quick Quads is a 6-coin per line game where you get extra 4 of a kind because trips, where 2 of the cards add up to the rank of the trips as quads. That is 88-44 or 88-53 pay just as much as 4-8s. The fact that you pay 6 coins per line makes the math work out. All right, we're talking to Anthony Curtis. In the past several years, Anthony, you and Frank B. have teamed up to enter football contests, and you've done very well. Do you have any information on season-long football contests that are going to be happening this year?
In fact, I do. I do. We've been, we do every year. We compile. We dig into it. We compile and list on at gamblingwithanedge.com. We list all of the tournaments with as much data as we think is relevant for people to play.
I saw Frank had a post today, but I didn't get a chance to read it yet. Is that what, it was something about football contests.
So. It was more about football contest strategy.
Oh, okay. I haven't read it yet, so yeah, I just saw that he posted something.
Frank has written a couple of really good, blog posts the last couple of weeks where he's talking about strategies, playing, essentially market efficiency strategy, which is, you know, using stale numbers and things like that, which is really the way I play and the way he plays predominantly versus pure handicapping. So anybody who wants to go in and read those posts, they're really, really good about the differences and why one works and is more effective than the other. We've used that strategy for years, and we've finished very, very, very high in several contests. So, you know, we know it's valid. In that same area, though, if you go under football 2017 and then go to contests, and you'll see this full contest listing that we have. What's interesting about the contests is that a lot of them come out right at the beginning of the season. So we won't even be able to list them all until like 3 days before the season starts. But the main ones are up. There's about 7 or 8 pay contests. One new big one this year at the Super Contest. It's called Super Contest Gold. $5,000 entry fee. 100% of the money being given back. Otherwise, it's the same as usual. It's a Super Contest, $1,500 to join. The Friday Football Showdown at Golden Nugget, $2,000 to join. You can only play that one time. The $500 College Contest at William Hill, so one I took second in last year. Another good contest. It looks like they're going to double their entries from last year. You can play that up to 4 times, so that's a $2,000 entry fee if you want to do it. And then the major free ones are the ones that I just say everybody should play because they're free and they're fun, and that being Station Casinos, Gridiron Glory, and Pick the Pros at Boyd Casinos.
But everybody plays them, but you have thousands and thousands and thousands of entry, and you're usually playing there not against the spread, but straight up. And all you need to do is go 16-0 and you win that week.
You're right. I mean, you can't, when you play those, you're talking about the free ones.
Yes.
You're talking about Gritter and Glory and Pick the Pros. Yeah. 15-1 probably isn't going to get it. You know?
Well, some weeks, you know, 12-4 will, but if there's a lot of upsets. But it is a lot, and there are people with multiple entries and who have a team where one guy enters a lot. It's free, but your EV each time is really low.
You've got to be doing it for entertainment value. I mean, this is not a moneymaker.
Yeah, right. I mean, if you're going to sweat football games anyway, and you go to the station or coast properties, yeah, why not? But
I can tell you, as someone who's played this almost every single weekend, especially Pick the Pros. Well, I play all of them, but Pick the Pros more than any other one. When you go through that morning slate, you've got about 4 games to go, and you're perfect. There's a buzz going, man. There's a lot of excitement because it's 30,000 every week. And the way I play it, I always pick at least one really big upset. So I know if that upset comes through, I'm going to eliminate so many others who might have the same card as me. So I know that if I go perfect, I might scoop the 30,000, or I'm going to be very close to an even split with another guy or two guys. So It's really more. It's really
but
more.
You
entertainment
can't make that is. Upset Monday night because that will just ruin a whole day.
No, Monday. Yeah. That's it. Doesn't matter. Sometimes it falls that way. You know, Monday you like to bet the favorite so you can take the points and try to middle it on a hedge. Right. You know, that's what you want to do there. You're playing all those little games. But I just think they're brilliant. I think they're brilliant because I think they're just fun as heck. And I think everybody who's not a serious player should play them. Serious players, you know, maybe they don't have time for that and they don't want to and it doesn't get them going, you know.
Can you play them on the app or do you have to go into
the... You have to go in and you have to go. But you can do it on a kiosk. You can write right up. You don't have to go and fill out things anymore. You can go right to a kiosk and punch, 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 punch. Same thing with Gridiron Glory. You can go to, like, the wildfires all around and you can do it all on kiosks. So it's a lot easier these days than it used to be. I mean, I'm guilty. I wrote an article a few years ago. It was called 17 Weeks of Misery. And what it was I would enter any football contest and I would go 17 weeks wishing it was over, right? I hate this. But it's gotten easier. It's gotten easier to do.
We're taping and posting this show 2 days before the Mayweather-McGregor fight. Whatever we say here has a possibility of looking ridiculous, given that many of our listeners will hear the podcast after the fight, while we're here prognosticating before said fight. That all said, smart money says Mayweather will beat McGregor handily, but most of the square money is coming in on McGregor by people praying for a miracle. The current line, somewhere around minus 400, strikes me as way off where I think the line should be minus 1,500 or minus 2,000. Now, my gut feeling is gamblers should bet a significant portion of the farm on Mayweather. Anthony, what do you think?
Well, let me preface this by saying that, you know, I just said I'm not a handicapper. And I don't, you know, I bet a lot of sports and I usually do it by finding off numbers. And, you know, again, I'm a market guy. Same with contests. However, that said, one thing I do pay a lot of attention to is combat sports. I just like it. I mentioned it before. I was a wrestler coming up my whole life, and MMA has a lot of wrestling component in it. I'm just a fan of the various styles. Watched boxing all my life, so I mean, I do have some opinions on this. First of all, and listeners, do not take this to the bank. You know, I mean, this is just me talking. But first of all, that 400 is long gone. I mean, it did touch 400, lay 400 on Mayweather, just slightly offshore in a few places. I checked yesterday real quickly. I checked all the apps at all the major Vegas casinos, and there was nothing under 500 anywhere. So it's you know, back toward the Mayweather a little bit. I believe that Mayweather is going to win the fight. I mean, it seems like a sure thing that he's going to win the fight, but there's a bunch of things that give me pause. You know, there's a bunch of things that make me not want to lay 5-1. One is that McGregor is big.
You only have to lay 4-1.
No, you have to lay 5-1. It's gone back to 500. It's 500 right now.
Which is 4-1.
Well, okay. I don't want to bet minus 500. He's just a big guy. Man, he's a big guy. And he's going to be, the way these guys do it, the way wrestlers do it, and these guys in the MMA is they'll be a good close to 20 pounds bigger than what they weighed in at when they get into the fight. And naturally, Mayweather just can never match him in size. They've talked about the lefty, the fact that Mayweather supposedly has problems with lefties. To me, a bigger problem there is going to be what I would expect will be a very strange stance coming out of Conor McGregor. If you've ever watched McGregor fight, he's got a very funny wide stance, something that Mayweather's never seen before. That scares me a little bit. McGregor's always had a tendency to gas. I mean, as I've watched him going late into MMA fights, which are 5-minute rounds, that's rough. 5-minute round is rough. At the end of that, in the fourth and fifth rounds, you get into 20 and 25 minutes, he sort of tends to gas a little bit, but he always seems to be able to pull it, you know, gut it out and come back. I think it's going to be significant that these are 3-minute rounds, and he's going to have time to rest on the stool. So even though you're looking at 36 minutes total on a 12-round fight, longer than an MMA contest, I think that 3 minutes is going to be different. Also, and the thing that bugs me a lot is and I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all, but man, if somehow there's an upset here, they're going to make another $300-400 million, aren't they, by doing it again? And so, I mean, how important what's more important to Mayweather, 50-0 or 300 million more? I don't know. I tend to think, look, I'm going to bet Mayweather. I am, but I'm not going. I know guys who are putting so much money on it, and I'm not going crazy. I'm just not. Now, one more thing I will say, I will look at the rounds, and the rounds total is coming down, and everyone's saying there's going to be a knockout, and there's going to be a knockout. I don't see where this is coming from.
Yeah, by who? I mean,
Mayweather hasn't knocked anybody out since 2008.
Right. I mean, that's not his style.
Right. And McGregor is a tough son of a gun. He is going to be real hard for anybody to knock out, especially with these bigger gloves. I don't see a knockout. I just don't see how that's going to happen. They're talking about disqualification, blah, blah, blah. I mean, there's all these things built into the contract that if McGregor does something wrong, he forfeits up to 90% of his purse. He's not going to do something stupid and kick him or, you know, try to take him down. He's not going to do it. So where does the knockout come from? McGregor's going to knock out Mayweather? I don't think so either. So I'm looking at the round is down to 8.5 over with plus money, and I'm going to bet over. I'm going to bet over 8.5.
So a couple of things. One thing really bugs me is I hate all these articles that say, oh, if McGregor wins, it may be the death of sports books. And, you know, these sports books cry so much every time they take any kind of beating, and it just really bugs me.
Well, they're not going to have the exposure that they're talking about right now. I mean, all the Mayweather money is going to come in between now and fight time. It's going to come in
the last few hours, tomorrow.
Not even now, and not even today. That money's going to come in droves.
Yeah.
And you know, I heard who was it? I guess it was Tony Miller from the Golden Nugget was talking yesterday on one of the sports shows, and he said, "Look, anytime I want Mayweather money, all I got to do is drop it below 5. When I drop it below -500, I'm going to get all the Mayweather money I can handle. And if I want to balance my books, I will. And if I want to gamble on Mayweather, then that's what we'll do. And I think that's the decision the books will make. They'll gamble on Mayweather. Their books will be overloaded toward Mayweather because they think that they're getting a bargain price. And I think they are too, as well. So, I almost feel sheepish saying, all these things could happen. But they could, you know. So anyway, I'm looking at Ronald.
Well, I mean, what you say about, hundreds of millions of dollars payday, yeah, that's a real question. I mean, Floyd is known for going through a lot of cash, and that's a question. What's it worth to him to...
I think a lot. See, I think it's worth a lot to him to...
I mean, being 50-0, I think, is also worth a lot to him, but...
Well, here's the other thing. The one other thing that I left off is in my notes, but I just glanced over it. I keep hearing stuff about training, about that he's not training the normal way. And I keep seeing him being spotted at places all around town over and over and over again. Mayweather was here. Mayweather was at this party and on and on and on. Now, this guy doesn't drink. He doesn't drink. So, okay, he's at a party. I think he trains at midnight. So, okay, so he trains for 2 hours and he goes and he winds down. So is that a bad thing? But I hear other things that he's not training the way he's trained before. I find that so hard to believe.
But I wonder if they're just putting that out, to try to drive the price down. And
I've heard it from some sources that aren't necessarily those kind of sources. So, again, when I put all those things together, it gives me a little bit of pause. I will still make a bet on Mayweather to some degree, but I'll probably bet more on the rounds.
You know, the other thing I wanted to say is Captain Jack, who's coming on the show fairly soon again, made what I thought was a really good point, and that is what's really important, and this will segue right into what we're going to talk about next, I think. This is what we're going to look at if we get legal sports betting across the United States. You're going to have all of this square money that's going to shift things in crazy ways, and it'll be a great time for the sharp bettors.
Yeah.
All of the
sharp bettors, the sharp bettors that I know all said yes, assuming it's not a federal blanket thing where all we have is one William Hill across the nation.
Right, but if it's state by state,
yeah,
it's going to be...
And that's what this is all about. The Supreme Court decision is all about states' rights, so it's going to be state by state. There's going to be no federal... there's going to be no federal blanket rule on what's going to happen here. And if it catches fire and picks up and really catches fire and goes one at a time. All you're going to really need are three or four of the big states to fall. That would be, you know, Pennsylvania looks like they might be next, and then California, New York, Michigan, Texas. These are all places that are looking at it. You know, you get those. It doesn't have to be all 50 states. You're going to have a really cool kind of buffet to choose from if you're a guy who knows what he's doing.
That'd be kind of crazy if Texas has sports betting but no casinos. I mean, it's criminal that they don't have casinos in Texas.
Right? They ought to have some good beef in their buffets, too.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. They do have casinos in Texas. But
yeah. Now, Richard was sillily referring to legal casinos.
Yeah.
All right. So a few questions you guys weren't told about because I pulled them off a different list. These are from listeners that we were saving for the next time Richard and I had to fill in an hour with no guest, but now we have to fill in 15 minutes with a good guest, so we're going to give some of those questions to Anthony. In a past show, Blade said shoes were where the money is at blackjack. Richard agreed. A listener wants to know why, since Double Deck has better odds.
You want me to answer that?
Yeah, we'll let Richard have a
I'll
say,
I'll let you
too.
Go first.
Well, I mean, you know, it's been a long time since I've played, you know, blackjack for stakes, you know, since I was out there doing it. But, you know, you pretty quickly learn that a shoe is going to provide you, a shoe that's dealt deeply is going to provide you a lot more opportunity. And that there's just, especially back when I was playing 20 years ago, 25 years ago, you know, there were a lot of single decks, and that's where all the guys who wanted to show off and be good and had learned to play, they all wanted to go play the single deck or the double, you know, even the double decks, and they would stay, you know, a little more away. So you'd want to go to a shoe to not look like that particular person. You know, beyond that, if you got a shoe that's dealt deeply, you're going to have more opportunity than you get in a single deck. You know, the single decks are going to break them quickly. You're just not going to get the same penetration. That would be my main things.
Yeah, the other thing is that in the vast majority of places, the double decks have become a trap. Certainly on the strip, they know that the sort of amateur card counters are all going to gravitate to the double deck for exactly the reason he states, that, you know, they think the odds are better. The point is, you just are not going to be able to win any significant amount of money on those games because they watch them like a hawk and you'll get barred right away.
Yeah, here's a big problem with beginning gamblers that I've seen all my life, is they read something and they treat it like they're going to go use it and play it in a vacuum. You know, like, okay, so this is a perfect world where I can find the game that gives me, you know, 0.02, 0.03% more than that game over there. But they don't think about, just like when Bob talked about the games at Cromwell earlier, that, okay, you've got to, you know, 5 times or 10 times more to get a point on the slot club and all this kind of stuff. They don't consider those types of things. And they go, I'm going to go get that extra 0.03%. And many times you're kicking yourself in the rear end by doing it. You're better off playing the lesser game. In many, many opportunities, you're better off playing the lesser game, especially in a game like blackjack or, you know, in a table game.
Yeah, I've said for years that learning how to count cards is easy. Learning how to take money out of a casino is very tough.
Yep.
And, you know, this is an example of exactly what you're talking about. Yes, theoretically, the double deck is better, but in practice, it's not.
You know, it's something you can take that even further. When you're talking about cover play, when you're playing on a table, and so you're jumping your bets, you get to a point where you jump your bet in a shuffle game, in a handheld game, and the dealer on purpose shuffles against you because he's starting to suspect you, or the boss is suspecting you, and he's got in the office to shuffle. So he shuffles the deck. Don't pull your bet back. I mean, the greatest heat deflector in the world is to not even flinch. Just sit there. It's the biggest bet you've made all day. So what? You're going to fade 0.3 off the top. So what? I mean, it's going to buy you 10 more hours of play, and beginners just don't understand those nuances.
One more blackjack question. How do you know when to play two hands when the true count is up? Every time I seem to put in another hand, it gets worse, and I'm losing twice as much now because either the dealer is getting all the good hands or another player. Who wants to take that?
You got
to
go first.
Yeah, that's kind of like, well, you know, that's sort of like an old wives' tale type thing where you go, you know, this keeps happening to me. It's that selective memory thing and everything else. You know, you're often going to split to two hands for as a way to get more money on the table. You know, I mean, there are various reasons to do it. If you're, it's a penetration thing on a handheld game. But I mean, typically when you go to two hands, it's a way to vary your bets. It's a way to get more money on the table without just stacking vertically. And your results, how many times have I read Bob Dancer write, your score today doesn't matter. Your results today don't matter. It's if you did it right and you've got the edge and you've put more money out and your bankroll can handle it, you've done the right thing regardless of what happens.
Yeah, you got to learn. I mean, this is a much more important lesson than anything else about what you're learning in counting cards, is that those kind of things do not matter. How many hands you play, whether a guy at the end of the table hit, took the dealer's bust card, any of that kind of stuff. I mean, it just does not matter. The deck does not know whether somebody made a good play or a bad play or how many hands were dealt. So until you learn that, you really can't. I don't think you can become a winning gambler if you're still thinking that those kind of superstitious thoughts.
Right. And going back to the letter of the question, I mean, right to the beginning of the question, how do you know when to do that? Really, the only reason you would do that is to get more money on the table. Like maybe if you're playing at a high level and you reach the limit on what you can play and you play two hands of that limit or something, you know, I don't know. Is it really that important?
Yeah. Or you may go to two hands if there are multiple players at the table because you're, for the same amount of variance, you can bet more money and right. have a higher EV. You know what I mean?
But it's a small consideration as opposed to a vertical bet that bets the same amount. You know, and two hands of 100 as opposed to, it'll lower your variance a little bit as opposed to one single hand of 200. But over a period of time, it's not necessarily that significant. The important thing is when the count goes up, get the appropriate amount of money relative to your bankroll on the table, and you're gonna beat the game over time.
It's not unique to blackjack that someone constantly focuses on negative events when they're gambling. There are swings in gambling, and sometimes good things happen and sometimes bad things happen. If you can't handle those basic swings emotionally, don't be gambling. Might want to consider bowling. I go out of my way to avoid people who are constantly complaining about negative things. To me, they're a drag to be around. And you see a lot of such people in the gambling world.
Yeah, well, yeah, like guys in poker who always want to tell you their bad beat stories, right?
That's the best, right? You play. I don't play that much poker. I haven't played that much poker, but I have played poker. And when someone tells me how badly I just played a hand that I beat them on, I just go, those are your chips right here. They're mine now. That's all you got to say, right?
Yeah. When I used to play backgammon, I had a friend who would print up business cards. And when someone would come up to tell some bad beat story, he would hand them a card and it would say, like, listen to bad beat story, $5. nod and commiserate, $10. You know? Otherwise, get the hell away from me.
Very good. Thank you, Anthony. It was a pleasure having you here. We'd love to have you. Was there anything else you wanted to say before we go?
There is something else I wanted to say, because in my commercial on the Comp City slots app, how smart am I? I didn't say that it is available now. It's a free download in the Google Store. And it will be in the Mac. It was rejected from the Mac store because of something they didn't like, and we're improving that right now. So by the time this show airs, it's a free download at both the iTunes and the Google Store.
Oh, hey, before we go, what books are in the pipeline?
Aha. And I did write that down at the very end. Yeah. We got a few minutes?
We do.
Yeah.
Okay, quickly. I'll try not to make it too commercially. One thing I think is cool that I'm proud of, because we just talked about sports. I mean, how many good sports betting books are out there? Not very many, right? You've got, King Yao's book is pretty good, Weighing the Odds at Sports Betting. Stanford Wong's book for its time was good. You know, some of it's outdated. He's got the good stuff on teasers and all of that. There's just not a lot of really good stuff out on sports. We've got 7 sports betting books in the works.
Wow.
Yeah, and one of them by Frank B. and he surprised me. I didn't know he was going to. And it's going to be a monster. So we got 7 books. We're anticipating that sports is going to be the next big thing. So we got some stuff from some bookies. We got some stuff from some players. We got some handicapping. We got a beginner's book by Blair Rodman, who did Kill Phil, a beginner poker book. So we like those. We've got 2 coming out from one of the Richard, your guy who sat in your seat prior to you, meaning Mike Shackelford, Wizard of Odds. He's going to update his fine book, Gambling 102. He's working on a rewrite right now. There's going to be several new chapters, things switched out, things updated. And he's also doing the first Keno book I've ever done. He's doing a book on Keno, which is essentially going to be just a comparison of different Keno pay scales, which is cool for the people who love to go out and play Keno, because you can play Keno anywhere from 35% to 5%, to be honest with you. These are schedules that we've seen out there. So
Shaq's book be called Gambling 103?
No, we don't think so. We talked about that, and we think we're gonna leave it 102, because it's gonna be a lot of the same stuff, but it's gonna be worth getting for just the new things that are gonna be added and new games. And then of those that just came out, Frugal Gambler Casino Guide, I still think Gene Scott for Beginners is about as good as it gets for covering all the games. And frequent guest on this show, Bob Nersession, is updating already The Law for Gamblers. We've got 2 new chapters from Bob already. So as soon as that book's ready for a reprint, that will go back in with 2 new chapters from Nersession.
You have a recent book, which we're going to cover in the relatively near future on the air, on rock concerts in Las Vegas.
Yeah. We obviously, Huntington Press, which is my company, the parent company of Las Vegas Advisor, is a publishing company, a full service publishing house, and obviously we do gambling books, we do blackjack books, we do video poker, we do anything that has to do with gambling that we think is good. But we also do things about Vegas in general. And this guy, Pat Christensen, has been the head of Las Vegas events for 30-some years, came to me with a book on live music, the explosion of live music in Vegas. When I came to Vegas in the late 70s, early 80s, there was nothing live concert-wise. In the casinos, there were lounges everywhere, but there weren't live acts unless you were talking about Frank Sinatra, Stephen Eady, that sort of thing on a stage in a showroom. This is about concert venues, which began in the early 1990s with the Grateful Dead going to Sam Boyd, and Vegas exploded literally to the point where it is in the top five for live music events in the entire United States now. So this is the chronology and the history of that, and it's pretty good. And what's really cool about this might never have been said, but we were talking about combat sports and all of that. The author, who would never tell you this himself, but Pat Christensen was an NCAA Division I wrestling champion, which is really something for Wisconsin. I mean, that is really something. So I knew of him. I knew who he was when he came to me. And so I looked at his proposal, and it's a slick book. You guys will have a good interview on that.
Make sure we don't make him mad.
Sounds like there might be a wrestling book in the future coming out of HB.
No, there's not enough to write about that. But I don't know. I just thought it's interesting. There aren't many of those walking around, so I thought that was kind of cool.
Very good. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.